You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer, and I specialise in food and science. This podcast is titled The Food Initiative, Urban and Peri-Urban Food Systems. It's an interview with Emma Chow, Food Initiative Lead at the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, to talk about the role of cities in pioneering regenerative food systems. And the foundations work with cities across the globe on their journey to creating a functioning circular economy for food. Emma, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, the Food Initiative launched early last year, I think. What is it and how did it come about?
Yeah, so the Food Initiative was launched in June of 2019, a few months after we had released a report called Cities and Circular Economy for Food. And all of this started in the early days of 2018 when I first joined the foundation. And we had this hypothesis that the principles of circular economy, which is to design out waste and pollution, to keep products and materials in use, and to regenerate natural systems, that those principles that underpin all of our work at the foundation also could bring something significant to the food system challenges that we're facing globally. And we also had this hunch that cities, given that so many people, and increasingly so, are living in cities, have a big role to play. And what we found in our analysis is that it is indeed correct, both of those hypotheses, and that about 80% of the world's city of the world's food is expected to be eaten in cities by 2050. So massive demand power that's lying within cities. And at the same time, we can apply the principles of circular economy to the activities in cities. So cities can be sourcing food that's actually grown in ways that work with nature rather than against nature, and in so doing so, regenerate nature. And at the same time, make the most of food and design out waste. And right now, less than 2% of the 2.8 billion tons of organic waste that's landing in cities is being collected and treated in a circular way today. So we saw great potential. So we mapped out this vision. We saw those clear benefits worth about $2.7 trillion each year by 2050 if cities around the world take actions in those domains that I just mapped out. And we said, let's move into action. And that's what's led to the Food Initiative, which is now about halfway through its three-year mobilization phase, which is about taking that vision that was in the report and starting to show that this can be put in place on the ground in a way that is scalable and replicable throughout the world.
And before we dive into the detail of it, can you just define urban and peri-urban food systems for us?
Yes.
And that tells why they're important, I guess.
So yeah, I would define it by looking at the geographic areas. So the urban area we would define as the perimeter of the city, right? And then the peri-urban is this kind of donut around the city that's defined by about a 20-kilometer radius. And actually about 40% of the world's existing irrigated cropland sits in that peri-urban zone. So there's this notion of what would it mean to actually connect with food that's grown nearby already? Because the reality is, at least what we found in our work, is there's very little logic often to the flows of the food, and you might be growing food types nearby in that peri-urban zone that can be eaten, that are eaten in the urban area, but instead we're bringing food from very far away, those exact same food types, into that city, and at the same time exporting the same food that's grown in the peri-urban zone far away.
And so it seems that we're not actually utilizing the proximity of the peri-urban environment.
Yes, yes. Okay. And when you think of the waste streams, what we currently call waste streams, so those the massive amounts of organic waste that's arising in cities today, in circular economy, it's about using that as an input for a next cycle. And the urban waste stream can be converted into agricultural inputs, such as compost, organic biofertilizers, animal, fish feed, etc., that can go back out kind of feed back out to those peri-urban agricultural zones.
Yeah. Now, let's also just touch on the circular economy concept. You mentioned it a little bit there. Now, the overall principles are to keep things within the system. Is that right?
Yes. So it's keeping things within the system and designing out waste in doing so and pollution. And very importantly with food is regenerate natural systems.
Yeah. Now, how much of that is already done? And what sort of targets are reasonable to expect for the future?
So when we look at the waste side of things, the statistic that I briefly mentioned earlier of less than 2% of the 2.8 billion tons of organic waste arising in city, which is mostly food byproducts and including human waste, because that's ultimately a byproduct of food that we eat, is actually being collected and treated in a way that isn't landfill or incineration or going uncollected altogether. So with that in mind, there is massive room for opportunity and a lot of progress to be made very quickly to meet the scale of the challenge that we're facing on the waste side of things.
Are you bold enough to set targets for what you would like to see?
Well, I think it's tough to say globally, you know, in terms of what we would like to see. And it really is based on the baseline of each place. I wouldn't want to set a figure that would be applied universally, because you do have some places in the world that have moved very far along. Places like Milan, they are very advanced and a pioneer when it comes to organics collection. And likewise in the developed economies, human waste collection and treatment is normally close to or at 100%, versus in emerging, the rest of the world, when we take it into account globally, I think it's about 80% of human waste is not being collected and treated.
Yeah. So in terms of looking at the solutions to this, where are the low-hanging fruit and where are the big changes to be made? Is it a question of regulation, moral imperative? Is it technology, politics, money? Or is it more about a simpler level of cooperation, you know, looking at the urban areas actually connecting to peri-urban areas?
Yeah, a lot is just on that last point about connection and new ways of collaboration.
And can you give some examples of what you mean by that?
Yeah, of course. So I should mention that in this initiative, we're working very closely with three partner cities. So London, Sao Paulo, New York. And our ambitions there are to be this facilitator, bridging public and private sectors, bring the circular economy principles to paint this overarching universal vision, and then support demonstration of that on the ground. And so in this past year and a half, we've learned a ton just through the convening and the workshops and the side meetings that we have been facilitating and bringing together even the different departments within a single municipality, where you may have never had someone in the sanitation department ever speaking to someone from the economic development department of the regional government or the public procurement. And they hadn't connected, well, how we manage our waste actually has something to do with the food that's grown and flowing into the city. And so what are the opportunities that we can capitalize on if we make those connections? So that's even internally, and we see that likewise in companies too. And then when you start to think about collaboration across the sectors, that's really where the new ways of working you start to realize. And there can be friction in that. But I think that is the types of friction we need to embrace and move through, because it's really our only option if we're really going to take a system-wide approach to these really, really tough food system challenges.
And for you, on a personal level, were there any particular surprises? I mean, the idea of a couple of people not speaking to each other, I think is quite shocking for me. But what else, when you started the initiative, what hit you and made you think, well, why isn't this happening already?
Yeah, I would say definitely on the organic waste streams, there have been several instances of hearing, oh, well, yeah, we're treating that. And then when you really dig into it, what's happening to it is it's being incinerated into bioenergy. And that's actually not part of our vision, because it's not keeping the products at their highest value. There are many other, what we would call is value cascades, right? You can create several different products, and as another byproduct to that is you can capture bioenergy. That's really maximizing the value. So to see that there's so much opportunity to bring in innovation there as well, and scale up some of the proven innovations that we have seen, and really be, if you're collecting it, don't just have the objective of, oh, well, we're diverting from landfill. It should have a higher level of ambition and really make the most of it. So I'd say that's one area.
And the idea of cooperation being at the heart of this, I find absolutely fascinating. Is it just how have we got to this point where people are not cooperating? Is it just that nobody's come along like you to say, do you think you should chat to each other? is it simply people not connecting dots, or not having an overall concept of the, you know, the moral imperative?
Well, I think it has to do with the disconnection from the system that food's a part of. And what I've observed and experienced myself, even during these times in the wake of the pandemic, is actually, for many, it's making you realize that food is coming from this hyper complex global system. And there are very distant actions that then ripple to where you are. And food, you really do need to lean into the complexity. I think it's sometimes referred to as the mother of all system challenges. Yeah, I think that's why the collaboration is so important. But it's that disconnection from even knowing where our food comes from, right? That's I should have mentioned that earlier on things that have surprised me, is just how little awareness people have. And I'm not talking about citizens here. Well, that's probably the case in general too, is especially as urban citizens, right? That's part of it, is you may never even go to a farm. And how can you value your food and shape healthier food cultures if we're totally disconnected? And food system actors as well, there needs to be an understanding of the role in the broader system.
Yeah. Okay, can you give us some detail about some of the projects within the food initiative that you're working on? What are some of the interesting things that are beginning to you know, really have an effect?
Yeah. So apart from some of the relationship building and capacity building within the municipalities themselves, we've also seen some really great pieces of work coming out of the cities, including London, who released earlier this year in June, a circular restaurant guide, which is not just food, but also covers things like energy usage, packaging, and like materials in the buildings themselves, but the food, of course. So we felt like that was a really great offering that they were bringing to the restaurant groups in London, especially as part of a way to build back and a way forward for better growth. We're also developing, and soon to hopefully be launched, a tool, an online tool for municipalities around the world to be able to self-assess how circular their food system is, and also a tool that hopefully will provide some of the learning capabilities as well, and just understanding what does it actually mean to apply circular economy principles to food.
Yeah. So at the heart of all this, who is it that you get most success from talking to? I mean, is it businesses? Is it restaurant associations, producers, the farming industry, waste collection, government, or is it actually consumers? Who is your main target?
Yeah, so it's primarily the system actors rather than the consumers. And that's our focus at the foundation, is saying we need to get the system right. And then food, it's like, how do you create those food environments so that those better for you, better for the world choices are also the everyday default choices, right? And so with that in mind, we're working with a lot of companies and buyers of ingredients, whether that's major food manufacturing companies or public procurement arms of cities, and taking that demand-driven approach. But to that question of who is it exactly, it's actually the people that we're interacting with, I like to think of are the champions, right? They're the champions of circular economy. And it might only just be one person even who we're in touch with day to day. And they're the one bringing this into their department and across departments and into their organization. And they're the people who, A, are system thinkers, and they get it, and they see the clear benefits and opportunities. And this paradigm shift from going from this mindset of let's try and do less harm and less damage, undo the damage, to actually, and especially with food as it's part of nature, we can move into this positive impact realm if we get it right, because nature is inherently regenerative.
And again, just thinking on a personal level for you, you must come across instances of activities that you just think, why are you people doing this? Why aren't you doing something else? What are the frustrating things that you look at and you go, oh, come on?
Oh, I'd say efforts that are treating what you put on the plate as the silver bullet. Because what we found in our work is about half of the food system costs today is cost to society. So this is health and economic, environmental, is due to what's on the plate. So that's the diet side of things. But then the other half of the costs is how that food is grown and what happens to the waste and byproducts. So we need to get both of them right. And yes, when there's instances of saying, okay, well, we just need to get what's on the plate right, then we're only covering half the problem, and that's only going to get us so far.
And in terms of practical things that can be done, is it a sort of a complex web of some easy tasks to achieve, some conceptual tasks and some practical things? What I'm getting to really is, are there low-hanging fruit? Are there easy solutions at some level of this?
Well, I would say that there are some solutions that are a bit more straightforward than others. Probably the most straightforward and where we see a lot of movement and progress is indeed around taking what are waste streams and turning them into inputs for new products. That gives way to new revenue streams, right? We see entire businesses designed around that, especially when it's the inedible streams, you know, making textiles out of orange peels. We see startups doing that, and pharmaceuticals. What's trickier, but actually holds the biggest potential for impact, and especially when we think of food moving from where it is today as a big contributor to climate change and biodiversity problems in the world, is and moving to a big part of the solution, right, rather than a contributor, is at the production level. So really moving from conventional industrial farming practices to those that are regenerative. And like I was saying earlier, going far beyond the aim and ambition of just try and undo the damage. And that transition is not easy. It's not going to be easy. We see some really great efforts out there. But I think that's where we really need to lean in and know that it's not going to be simple.
An example of that? A practical example of that?
Of regenerative?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you can look at some companies, right? And companies making some commitments around it, which is a good signal, like General Mills. I think it was in the past 2 years, 1 million hectares or 1 million acres to regenerative by 2030. Which is great, and they're working with the Nature Conservancy in the U.S. to be retraining and giving some technical assistance to producers of oats, for instance, to be moving towards regenerative. And then we also see in other areas of the world some practices that have been used for ages, right? This is not new. This is not a new, I don't want to try and portray it as some radical new thing. because actually our ancestors farmed in ways that were regenerative before the Green Revolution. And it's not about going back to those an agrarian society. It's about saying, how do we use tools that we have now, like digital tools and things that give us new capabilities, but are embodying those same kind of characteristics of farming practices a while back. And duck rice farming in Southeast Asia is a really great example of how these farmers have for such a long time been integrating the ducks with the rice paddies, and the ducks' movement going through those rice paddies, it's actually good for the soil. And then of course their poop is a good fertilizer. And so they don't need these external inputs, and it's this symbiotic relationship. And we can look to nature, because nature works in this way, to actually learn how to reapply these into how we grow food.
Yeah. Now we've spoken to a few farmers who are really, really committing themselves to regenerative farming. And we've talked to quite a few over the last few months, but it still feels like a slightly fringe idea. Now, is there a sense that this just has to be shifted into the mainstream? And how do you do that in when you're dealing with a very traditional industry?
I'm not sure if I agree that it's totally a fringe idea, because actually in the past year and a half in particular, we've seen significant uptick. And there's,
for
instance, one group, you know, if you look at their website, One Planet Business for Biodiversity, OP2B, which was launched by a number of businesses during last year's, it was about a year ago, in New York Climate Week. UN Climate Week, in front of the UN, the CEO of Danone, Emmanuel Faber, launched it. And they very explicitly use the words regenerative. You know, it's not about just trying to do sustainable intensification. That's not the aim. So there's, I don't know how many companies at this point, they launch with a couple dozen, but it might be more, and many major food, but also textile companies. Are involved. So I actually sense that it is moving to become mainstream, at least in awareness and commitment and acknowledgement. But of course, if you look at just acreage, you know, dedicated to regenerative practices or even organic, let alone regenerative globally, it is still marginal.
So a circular economy requires rewiring a lot of the food system, really, or making new connections with it, at least. And you're currently working with over 20 city partners, I believe. Where's the tipping point for this to make a significant difference to the global food system?
Yeah, you know, that is such a good question. Where exactly is the tipping point? Yeah, I've been thinking about this all. We're constantly evolving our programs and strategies. I should mention that this isn't the only initiative we have at the foundation, but we have similar ones on other industries like plastic packaging and fashion, and recently launched on finance, which is completely different in nature. But yeah, I think it's looking at the uptick in the actual, you know, more, I suppose, like mainstream, has a critical mass of industry players, and in this case, cities as well. Are they taking on circular economy as part of their strategies, their action plans, their communications? That's, for instance, the type of KPI that we look at. For me personally, it's also been just looking at major food system events and platforms and city networks. Is circular economy showing up on their agenda? And how is it showing up? Because it also, circular economy is not just about the waste side of things, as sometimes it's understood, but it also includes this production side. So it's important that the full understanding is being adopted as it becomes more and more widespread.
Yeah. And alongside the Milan Policy Pact, I guess it feels as though things are moving. So it feels as though there is a groundswell of interest and possibly change?
Well, I hope so. it's urgent that we need it. And
yeah, I do hold a lot of hope, especially as we lead into some major events in 2021 with the two COPs on biodiversity and climate, which food should and needs to be playing such a big role in, and also the UN Food Systems Summit, which I think has just been confirmed for September. So these next 12, 18 months, I think, have great potential to set implications, set our direction of travel and trajectory. You know, are we going to be trying to optimize business as usual in this linear system and keep trying to tweak and undo damage? Or are we going to really take bigger steps, scarier steps, to fundamentally redesigning?
Yeah. And has the impact of COVID kind of cropped up as a roadblock? Or is it actually kind of a fundamental to the whole concept of a circular economy?
Yeah, no, I would say, you know, I've been seeing it primarily from food perspective, but in general, actually, the interest in circular economy applied to food has been increasing over the past several months, especially when you think of the proximal piece, because supply chains and supply chain resiliency became top of mind. So recognizing that in general, in most places in the world at the moment, there's this massive imbalance skewed almost entirely towards depending on global sources, and how can you kind of rebalance that a bit and reconnect with what is produced locally. And in more generally for circular economy, this time has been only reconfirming that circular economy is more relevant than ever before, that we do need to do things differently, that there does need to be this paradigm shift. And we've seen that across our programs. We've been very fortunate as an organization that this has by no means set us back, but actually in some ways pulled us forward, or pulling us in many directions. And I won't fail to mention, though, that of course we've had some adjustments. And for instance, on the food initiative, of course the cities we're working with, they have went into emergency crisis mode. And some of them still are in that mode, where it is just looking at hour to hour, day to day, and adjusting our approach and how we can best bring value to those cities, and how circular economy can be applied as part of their response and rebuild process.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you're obviously very committed to this. And I can understand you not wanting to put specific targets, but what does success look like for you?
You know, this might sound a bit abstract.
Go for it. I can do abstract.
But it really comes back to the whole, as I'll put it, positive potential power of food. Because food is something that's, to me, like, so unique, because it touches all of our senses. At the most basic level, the power of food is to fuel our bodies with nutrition to get us through our days. But the full potential of food is that it is the centerpiece of our social interactions, of our identity, of our culture, of our economy. It's such a big part of our economy. And it's got all this flavor, right? It gives you this experience, this pleasure. And so right now, I think we're really failing to maximize, like, allow food to fully be its potential. And circular economy, it doesn't matter if people even know what circular economy is. I really doubt that citizens need to know what circular economy, especially for food, is. It's not going to be intuitive. But what circular economy is about is going into that positive paradigm and across all domains, not just optimizing for climate, right? But actually create, redesign for all. And I think for success for me, it's more of a mindset piece, that I would see this would just come through in presentations I would watch at events on food or cities, and in conversations, and in the language, in the documents, in the strategies that companies are putting out, which is, I think, quite different from the current landscape.
Yeah. I think for me, from my point of view, success in this kind of context is in the consumer level is about people caring a bit more about food. And the moment you care, I think things begin to get better. Well, look, we wish you the best of luck with this. I mean, it's not even the best of luck. Things have to change. And I'm sure that what you're doing is a big part of achieving that change. So so we look forward to catching up with you again and finding out how it's all going. Emma Chow, Food Initiative Lead at the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast brought to you by Food Matters with me, Stephen Gates, and Emma Chow. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from the chemistry of umami to agritech funding. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.